Good afternoon. I guess good morning. We're not quite the afternoon yet. I'm calling to order this meeting of the Conference Committee on House File 2292, which is the Early Learning Finance and Policy Bill. I'm glad to be back together again. The plan today, members and staff, members of the public, is to have a couple of presentations on some of the House-only provisions. They will not be all of the House-only provisions, but a few. In particular, there are a couple that have been asked about at the prior meeting on Monday, and then a couple of other things as well, and then we'll see what we can adopt. I'm hopeful. I think in talking with Chair Kunesh, we are hopeful together that we can adopt a number of provisions for inclusion in a conference committee report. To be clear, this will not be the end of it today. We don't expect to wrap things up today. We do hope to make some pretty good progress through a number of provisions, including some same and similar provisions and a few other things as well. So we'll see how far we get. And I'd say the plan is to try to strictly stop by 12:30. We maybe would bleed a couple minutes after that, but I know folks are very busy, a lot going on. So I'll just see if Chair Kunesh has anything that she wants to add at all, or
Nope, but just looking forward to a good meeting.
All right, good. Excellent. Thanks. And I'll just see if members have any questions at all. And I know certainly the folks on my side are very accustomed that if they've got anything that pops into their heads, they'll raise their hand and we'll go for it. So, okay, not seeing anything. So then why don't we start then by having a couple of presentations of proposals that came from Representative Katiza-Witun in the House. And so, yeah, come on up, Representative Katiza-Witun. I think the first one we're going to do is about the Executive Function Across Generations Curriculum Grant. And members and staff, there is a spreadsheet that I think we all should have with the comparison. And so this is line 12 of the spreadsheet, line 12, which is a $300,000 appropriation just in year one. And I've asked each of the presenters to keep the presentation to just a few minutes, under 5 minutes, I'm afraid, but just to give an orientation to members of the conference committee, then we'll see what questions we have. So, Representative Katiza-Witun, so glad to have you before us with your testifier, and we'll have you, I guess I'll turn it to you as to handle the time however you want.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. Glad to be here with you in conference committee. I know this committee in particular has a lot of really, really important decisions to make, so I appreciate you allowing me to present a couple of my provisions to the senators who have not been able to hear a couple of them that we included in the House bill. So this provision, it's from House File 1815, and it's a proposal that was live last session, went through the process, and then, of course, we didn't end up moving forward on supplemental budget bills at the end of last session. But it is a $500,000 appropriation to the Family Partnership to expand and integrate their executive functioning curriculum to sites across Minnesota. This curriculum uses a two-generation approach to, I just want to make sure that I'm on the right line.
Yeah, no problem. It's
$300,000.
Yep, $300,000.
Excuse me. And it uses a two-generation approach to help children between the ages of 3 and 5 and families who have had multiple adverse childhood experiences or who have experienced otherwise trauma. The sites will include rural, suburban, and urban early education settings, including settings for care providers like Head Start and preschool, home visiting programs, ECFE, et cetera, in high-risk communities. Of course, there is a report that is included, and with me today is John Till from the Family Partnership, so I will allow him to describe the programming in greater detail.
That sounds good. I'll just point out to folks that on page R23 of the side-by-side, subdivision 22 of section 17, I believe, line 22.10 is just the wording that goes along with the appropriation.
Thank you for that, Mr.
Yeah, sure. And Mr. Till, welcome, and please introduce yourself. Proceed.
Hello, Chair Pinto, Chair Kunesh, and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Representative Katiza-Witun for authoring this bill. My name is John Till. I'm the Senior Vice President of Strategy and Innovation at the Family Partnership and the model developer for executive functioning across generations. First, I want to introduce the Family Partnership, whose mission is to close achievement and opportunity gaps for Minnesota children and families living in poverty. We were founded in 1878, and we provide early childhood education, mental health counseling, home visiting, and we also operate the first program that was developed in the state of Minnesota for youth and adults who have experienced commercial sexual exploitation. 95% of our families live below 200% of poverty, and 90% are families of color. Executive functioning skills develop from ages 3 to 5. They're what Harvard Center on the Developing Child calls core capabilities for life, because they help children in that 3 to 5 age range learn how to learn when they're in preschool, do well in school K through 12, make friends and keep friends, make healthy choices in adolescence and later life, and get a job and keep a job, and eventually parent well themselves. So they really are two-generation skills. And executive functioning is often called the air traffic control system in the brain, because its key features include cognitive flexibility, working memory, impulse control, and the focus and persistence to get things done. We developed this intervention in our own preschool starting in 2017 because the children that we serve have experienced a lot of uncertainty and chaos. The earliest impact of adverse childhood experiences is on executive functioning skill development in ages 3 to 5. That's 20 years before you start to see the later effects of adverse childhood experiences, diabetes, heart disease, anxiety, depression, addiction behaviors. So it's really incumbent upon us to develop strategies to buffer kids against toxic stress in that age range.
You've got just about over a minute, just about a minute left.
Sure.
60 seconds.
So that happens through three basic strategies: giving kids language about their feelings, perceptions, and sensations, because once they have that language, then they can ask for help. Two is helping children and caregivers develop storytelling about emotionally significant events, because once you have that, you have the air traffic control to decide what to do next time something happens. And then mindfulness activities that help children reset during, very upsetting times. And so Harvard Center and the Developing Child helped us build this model with rigorous evaluation. We're really the only executive functioning intervention for young children and their caregivers that has any evidence behind it. We've piloted this in 5 states across the country. It's currently in use in 3 states, and we really think the time is now to expand this across Minnesota and see how this works in urban, suburban, and rural communities. And we look forward to presenting a report to the legislature about our results with the intervention.
So, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So, members, are there any questions at all for the testifier representative? Yeah, Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, then one follow-up. So, executive function across generations curriculum. If I can gather, based on what you just shared, really this is designed to help little kids make good decisions? Is that teaching them the skills to make good decisions? Is that kind of the premise of your program?
Mr.
That's
Till.
Correct. To focus and make good decisions. I apologize, Chair Pinto.
No problem. Yeah, wait. You can proceed. We go through the chair, so I just identify you, and then, yeah, please proceed.
That's exactly right, as well as to help their caregivers build those skills and really do serve and return with their children that builds those skills, because children are only with us in the preschools for, several hours a day. They're spending most of their day with their caregivers.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief follow-up. Could you help me understand or talk us through a scenario and how this gets implemented at the lowest level? Is this training being provided to folks in districts to then go through with students? Is there somebody in particular that's a part of this program that's at the district level interacting with kids? How does this permeate kind of throughout a school or a district per se?
It may even be younger than that. Maybe perhaps Mr. Till, if you can please explain.
Great question. So we would train staff who work directly with children and caregivers in preschools and Head Starts, home visiting programs, parenting programs, and early education programs to deliver this to children and or to their caregivers. So that's how it would work. And then the schools or other institutions have the tools that they need to deliver this intervention on an ongoing basis.
Senator Duckworth?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, good, thanks. And Chair Kunesh, please.
Thank you much. I like the generational approach in this program, and I'm wondering, what is the approach to generational help within a family system. I know that you're working with the children, but when it comes to the parents, to the grandparents, to the community that the student lives in, what kind of, is there any kind of work being done with the parents or the custodian of the child? You know, oftentimes we have families that comprise of multi-generations. And so I'm just wondering what the interaction with that part of the family complex might be within this program.
Mr. Teel.
That's central to our design. Even when we're working in a preschool setting where the primary service recipient of the intervention is the child, we also connect with the caregivers to let them know what we're doing and how they can help to build their child's executive function skills. So there's parent components as well, even when we're working with the children.
Chair Kunesh?
So when you do this, when you are creating this relationship with the caregiver and the family, in general, are you finding that it's successful and that those caregivers are open and willing to work with the organization or maybe some of the practices that you're helping the child with? I mean, what is the overall reaction from the caregiver?
Mr. Teel.
The reaction from caregivers has been extremely positive. The number one thing that parents say is that this intervention gives them insight into their children's behavior, which allows them to be able to manage their children's behavior better.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Oh, yeah, Representative Cassis, with you.
Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. And thank you for that question, Madam Chair. and I think Mr. Till's response certainly kind of hits the nail on the head, but I think that when we explore community partnerships, like the family partnership, we'll be training staff on site. This is a already an existing relationship that the families have, that the children have, and so it's not an additional step that they need to take to go and create trust with another person. It's already somebody that they know within a center that they're comfortable, and I think that that's really one of the little bits of magic of this program.
Yeah. Chair Kunesh, anything further?
Just one more thing.
Yeah, no, please.
And have you already have in mind or have some target areas across Minnesota that you would like to expand this to?
Mr. Till.
That's a great question. I was in St. Cloud 2 weeks ago at the statewide conference of ECFE programs, early family and child educators, and they're super excited about this. So this is one of the audiences. And we know there's a lot of demand and interest in this. So what we're planning to do is an RFP process for interested organizations so that the organizations that are most excited to try this out really have a clear pathway and an opportunity to do so.
Anything else? Okay. Any other questions from members? Doesn't seem like it. So, Mr. Till, thank you so much. Representative Cattis-Witun, thanks for this first presentation and really helpful to us. Mr. Till, thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Good stuff. As you're walking around, maybe just note, Senator Duckworth had asked about making good decisions, and so much of this, my understanding is about even being able to have the decision-making ability to make good decisions, because it's that air traffic control of, you know, maybe not grabbing for something or planning and those sorts of things, which is really good. So then, Representative Cattis-Witun, then we'll launch to your second presentation as Ms. Snyder comes. I think we have Ms. Snyder coming up. But Representative Cattis-Witun, members, this is the next presentation is line 4 from the spreadsheet, which is the Children's Savings Accounts Startup Grants. Again, just on the House side, not on the Senate side. That's page R21 of the side-by-sides, starting at line 20.6. And so Representative Cattis-Witun, we'll take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, yes, members, we have before us today a scaled-back version of my original proposal, which was House File 2864, the Mini-Kids Act, and kids as in Kids Investment and Development Savings Act. So the purpose of the bill, still the purpose of this bill, but scaled down from the original bill, is to assist children across the state of Minnesota in opening a savings account and upon graduation from high school, being able to utilize those funds that have matured for college or career training. It's based on a successful pilot program, which has been led by the City of St. Paul. We in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, two bienniums ago, did a state match with the City of St. Paul, and there's a private-public partnership. So I believe that the members should have some handouts accessible.
I believe
there's a little bit of background information on the Mini Kids Coalition and the success of the program in St. Paul. So I will just, since we're quick on time today, I will allow my testifier to give a little bit more background, and then we'll stand for questions.
Super. Ms. Snyder, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Committee. My name is Christy Snyder, and I'm the director of the Twin Cities Opportunity Youth Network at Youth Prize. I'm grateful to be here today to be part of a wide and committed team trying to bring many kids' child savings accounts to open up a wide variety of post-secondary options to all children in Minnesota. Research by Dr. William Elliott at the University of Michigan shows that children from low to moderate income backgrounds who have more than just $1 in a savings account are 3 times more likely to go to college and 4 times more likely to graduate. So I'm so grateful that Representative Katiza Watoon and Senator Bolden for championing this bill. When it is at its full strength, many kids would collaborate with families to open up a custodial account with $50 seed deposits for every baby born in Minnesota and $100 seed deposit for children born to low-income families. It is based on a wildly successful St. Paul model, but its current funding, we would be able to provide seed grants to 3 to 4 communities to organize stakeholders, learn from families, and financial leaders. In designing with families, we have been thoughtful of the state's goal of ensuring 70% of all Minnesotans have attained a post-secondary degree or certificate. And while these would just be babies, we have a little while to go. It is innovative programs such as these that change the trajectory of what can be achieved for babies and their families. So these funds can be used for technical and vocational school, 4-year college and university, two-year higher ed nonprofit certificates, all that have been approved by the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act list. Local communities will apply for these grants to convene community leaders, families, credit unions, and banks, nonprofits, and foundations. We will work in tandem to learn with each other how this might be best built for the families throughout Minnesota. Youth Prize will also leverage this mighty public funding to seek private funding to host a small pilot. As an intermediary, Youth Prize manages and regrants public and private funds, which means we shoulder a significant compliance burden, and we work to build capacity of these subgrantees. We have learned a lot, and we've increased our resources, and we've distributed over $50 million youth and young people at the heart of the work. We're excited to continue this momentum so that Minnesota will be the 18th state, joining North Dakota and Nebraska, to offer CSAs to more than 70,000 babies throughout the state. So you won't get rid of me yet.
Ms. Snyder, thanks for your work and thanks for being with us and also for keeping it decently under 5 minutes. So that was a quick presentation. Members' questions regarding this. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a few questions, but I'll just only ask a couple just to, for the sake of being brief, if that's okay.
Yeah, please.
So the first question is, if I'm understanding it correctly, any child born in the state would be eligible or would get at least $50 into a savings account for their future? Is that correct?
Well, the different, yeah, Ms. Snyder, you'll be able to clarify to either Representative Katiza-Watoon or Ms. Snyder.
When it's at its full strength, so not with this initial pilot funding, but eventually when we get to the full scale.
In theory, could eventually get there. This is just establishing a couple of additional pilot locations to test this out. So, but Senator Duckworth, yeah. I'll let you proceed.
I appreciate it, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Thank you. And so I understand. So St. Paul was referenced. That's a fairly new initiative, is that right?
It's been a few years now. I know that being as a St. Paul legislator. I believe Representative Katiza-Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. So Representative Kelly Herr was the chief author of the bill in 2019. It was included in our education budget at that point in time.
And I'm now remembering.
It went live.
January 1, 2020, actually, because I was there, actually, at the hospital that day. So January 1, 2020. Was when it started. So it's now been 3+ years that it's gone on. Okay. Senator Duckworth, yeah.
No, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And yeah. So looking to expand the pilot program, do we know where exactly the pilot – is this like a specific to cities, specific to certain school district?
So there's a sentence in here, but I'll let Representative Katiza-Watoon perhaps
yes,
you can
– yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification, Senator. It's something that we have in kind of – scaling back from the initial proposal, which would have taken this taken this program fully statewide, we want to look at how this program could get off the ground in not only urban, obviously, because St. Paul has shown success with the program, but rural areas, suburban areas, and then also tribal communities. So that they're going to work, Youth Prize is going to work with the communities who are interested in trying to get a program off the ground to make sure that we can kind of target and create a model for success in all sorts of cities.
And although the bill sentence starting on line 20.12 in the side-by-side says, to the extent possible, Youth Prize must award grants to urban, rural, suburban, and tribal settings, a variety of settings. So page R21 of the side-by-sides, and then the line starts 20.12. So there is that variety of locations.
Ms. Snyder might want to detail a little bit, or perhaps kind of listed on one of the handouts, but there are actually a number of cities who have already expressed interest in kicking off a program.
Ms. Snyder, if you have a little more to expand in response to Senator Duckworth's question, please.
Yeah, sure. Hennepin County is interested. St. Cloud has been interested. I think Rice County, there's been some communities in Rice County that have been interested as well.
So just expressing interest so far, but Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. When it was initially rolled out in St. Paul back in, it sounds like, 2020, was it given to students who were maybe already in high school? Was it targeted just for newborn children and their families? I guess how did it roll out? Because the success of the program has been referenced, which I don't doubt, but I'm curious within just a couple of years when it was given to students and how we're showing they've gone on to seek higher education, or how we're gauging that success and how we can expect it to impact other areas if we're to do additional pilots.
Ms. Snyder, Representative Cattizo-Witoon.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, the research was based on University of Michigan on other models. So like I referenced, that there's 17 other states that use it. So it is for babies only. So this is one of those things that when you're born, it's that cohort year. So unfortunately, if you're older, you don't get the $50 or the $100. So we don't have evidence right now in St. Paul of how that translates into post-secondary rates. We're looking at the other states that have implemented and been doing these throughout, and that's what the Michigan research is referencing.
Let's see if Senator Duckworth can.
I just want to say I appreciate the clarification. I only have one more follow-up, but happy to hear.
Representative Teasley, too.
Thank you. Yeah, I also wanted to share part of the success that we're looking at from the City of St. Paul's program is the number of additional deposits that families have made. So it's not just that this $50 that the city has given these families is sitting in the bank. They've actually contributed themselves, and they're continuing to entered the world of banking and savings, and we know that that is such a tremendous disadvantage for not only low-income families, but families who, are new to the country, who perhaps don't speak English as their first language, and so this is kind of getting them started on this path, and so that's part of the other success based on what we've seen locally here.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's also very helpful information as well. I'm glad that there seems to be some level of the ability to track that, which obviously can be a good metric for us to gauge. The only other question I have at this time is if a child benefits from this grant and their family continues to add to that over the course of their career in K-12, but they for some reason ultimately decide not to seek higher education, whether it's a two-year, four-year, or a trade, are they then allowed to access those funds and use them for how they see fit? Or I guess what happens to the money that was set aside for them for the purpose of going on to higher education if they choose not to?
Yeah, Ms. Snyder.
Thank you for that question. So I will say that in St. Paul, the average number is $129 in these bank accounts. So people have been adding because it was only $50 at the start. So it is a college, it's a child savings account. It's not a 529 account. And so what this is the investment that the state has stays with the state. So if young people do not use it by 27, or this was the design that we had in the original bigger bill, then it would go back into the pot. Any funding that is by the family is retained, but only the child can withdraw it. So there are abilities of parents can ask for permission, but generally the funding is in the child's name. So like if a child was in foster care or was eventually put in foster care, it would follow the child in the child's name.
Okay.
And I do anticipate we won't be voting on this today, so we can certainly have further conversations too. But Senator Duckworth, anything further?
Sorry, breaking the phone rule. I appreciate that. That's helpful. It sounds like it's kind of like a custodial account.
That's right.
Okay, sounds good. And then because I know you mentioned two different amounts, $50 and then $100 if maybe the family meets some sort of income threshold or metric. So of the accounts you referenced, the average being $129, Do you have a sense of the percentage of the accounts that were funded at the $50 rate versus the accounts that were funded at the $100 rate? Which type of demographic or family seems to be taking advantage of this, and at what levels, as we're trying to gauge its impact?
And Ms. I think the St. Paul one was only $50, so this the $100 thing would be a new thing. But Ms. Snyder, is that
that's correct?
Yeah. So it was only $50 in St. Paul. The $100 thing is a new thing. So
thank you.
Thank you so much, John. I think we've got some expertise to share. So Representative Perez Vega, or you had Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for presenting this opportunity. I remember when the city of St. Paul brought this to the plate, and I was short of a year of having a savings account for my daughter because she was born in 2019. But the excitement to see what can be valued for our families, in particular with communities of color that don't come from generational wealth. And when we look at the graduation rates, I don't know about other cities, but I do know about in St. Paul, when you have 96% white students graduating compared to 67% of Latinos or Black African-American, you recognize the importance of why we do need things as simple as $50 to start when a child's born. That goes a long way. It talks about getting the child engaged into financial literacy. My daughter's 4. She knows she has a savings account. She knows where her piggy bank goes to and when we drop it off. And that's just a part of an everyday matter of learning. But not everyone has that. And this is a growth and an expansion to be able to communicate and bring all communities to really pay forward in what that looks like for advancing graduation rates for our kids in St. Paul and higher education. So thank you for bringing this forth and fighting for it.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Are there other – and I should point out that there is some information in our packets as referenced before about the program. So anything else the members have? Looks like not. And so, Ms. Snyder, thank you so much for your work on this. And I will say, as a St. Paul resident, I mean, echoing Representative Perez Vega, I sure hope that communities in other parts of the state will have the same opportunity to benefit from this. And this is a great way to do it. So, Representative Cortez-Witun, thank you so much.
I think we're
solid on both your presentations. Thank you. And members, feel free to follow up with Representative Cortez-Witun. Representative Clardy, if you can make your way up. About the kindergarten entry assessment. There were some questions about this on Monday, or a question or two, and they came from Senator Duckworth, who since has introduced the bill in the Senate. So I'm thinking we may not need a presentation so much as – but I did want to make sure if there were questions that members of the Senate had for you, Representative Clardy, and I know you're here with Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham from MDE, if there are questions. So Representative Clardy, if you had anything brief that you want to say about the kindergarten entry assessment in our bill, and then otherwise we'll just go for questions. Representative Clardy.
I am so excited about this program. I've been teaching for 27 years, and my teaching has been in kindergarten through third grade. So I've done assessments from kindergarten through third grade every year, and I really value the data and how it can create a good instruction by teachers. So
thank you so much. Yeah, good stuff. Are there questions that that folks have, either from the Senate author or from anybody else? Senator Kunesh, perhaps not.
I think Senator Duckworth.
Oh, Senator Duckworth, I'm sorry. Senator Duckworth, please.
No, just briefly, and yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Curious to, if you would just share with us if this has been implemented in other parts of the country, what sort of impact or what sort of value they have seen through the implementation of such a program and trying to do some sort of baseline evaluation of our students as they're entering kindergarten, and how that has impacted teachers and school districts and their ability to meet the needs of these kids.
And Commissioner, if you're going to be answering that, I don't know if you will be, or we'll try you. If you could identify yourself just as you begin.
Thank you, Chair. Committee members, Bobby Burnham, Assistant Commissioner for Office of Teaching and Learning at Department of Ed. So back when Minnesota and many other states received the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant, one of the deliverables was to explore the implementation of a kindergarten entry assessment. So Minnesota did that, and we've been coming forth with a proposal similar to this for, I think, the last 4 or 5 sessions, and it's just not gotten to the point where we're at today. So many, many states are doing it. Every state does it a little bit differently. As you know, in Minnesota, our first universal data set is at third grade. And we all can agree that we need to know way sooner than third grade how our children are doing in school. So kindergarten entry assessment is going to provide that universal data set and will give us and give more importantly, give teachers and school leaders and parents a really accurate and informal set of data to know how their children are doing entering into the kindergarten year, but mostly for teachers and how to design their instruction and resource deployment and giving policy leaders and decision makers a data set prior to third grade that's really showing the impact of their investments.
Senator Duckworth, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say, you know, I know Senator Kunesh and others have done a great job trying to prioritize literacy and increase literacy rates amongst our kids all across the state. And this is an intriguing way, I think, that if given some consideration, might be able to help us achieve what we're trying to do in terms of helping set our kids up for success academically. The sooner we can know that they may or may not be struggling, especially as it relates to just knowing their letters and influencing their ability to read in the future, I think is important. So I thank Chair Kunesh for her work on that, and I appreciate your willingness to provide some folks here today to give us some more information, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And again, and thank you for authoring our House provision in the Senate. Chair Kunesh.
Thank you. This question is for the representative. So as a kindergarten teacher, do you do these kind of kindergarten assessments, and how have you used those assessments?
Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Chairs. currently, I am a reading teacher, so I do the assessments for the kindergarten students right now. And it helps the teachers with grouping. It helps them be able to communicate with their parents specifics, like where students are and what the growth is. And we start the year out this way, and it helps the teacher differentiate instruction and do the long term planning. So,
Chair, anything further?
And then, do you also then coordinate with the teachers, not just the classroom teacher, but any other support staff in the schools, as well as the family, in areas where that child could use an extra effort?
Representative Clardy.
Thank you. Yes, we do. It's a lot of communication that's based on the data, and it's kind of better than I'm sure a lot of parents have gone to conferences and heard, your child's really nice and she's doing really good, but what is good? So it's more specific, and it also gives the parents tools that they can use to push the growth in the area too. So, and as far as coordinating conferences with parents and not just waiting for those three times a year, but regular communication.
Chair Kunesh?
No.
Anything further? Okay. Anything further from any members? So not seeing anything. Representative Clardy, thanks for your work on this. And Commissioner Burnham, thanks for your longtime leadership in so many areas. We're really grateful to you for being here. Thank you. Good stuff. And then the final presentation, Representative Hill, you can make your way up. Members, this relates to section, one moment. I believe it's section 4 of the bill. And it's section 4 of the bill and relating to licensure, and then page R3 of the side-by-side. Again, I think just a brief presentation or just a brief explanation of your goal here, Representative Hill, is helpful, and then we'll go to questions. So Representative Hill.
Well, happy to be here. Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, friends. I'm from both chambers. I'm here to speak to Section 4, which talks about pre-kindergarten and early childhood education licensure requirements. This is legislation that has moved through the House chamber over the last 4 years successfully and is back again. The difference this time would be the effort that was put in to work with the stakeholders and the legacy language that is included. In the past, this provided with early childhood educators with 4 years to obtain licensure. What the current legislation that you have before you does is it allows for anyone who has 5 years of experience to have that legacy clause, that they would be able to continue to serve our youngest learners and families in that role and moving forward through their career. So if there are questions, I'm happy to speak to them, but pretty straightforward legislation.
Thank you so much, Representative Hill, and I know you've done a lot of work on this, and it has the support, I believe, of a number of stakeholders on the way as well. And actually, I should have, Representative Hill, and members, section 14 of the bill that modifies the definition of teacher for purposes of PELRA, I believe, is a part of your bill as well. And so maybe it makes sense to address that as well, if we can. I don't know if you're prepared to do that.
Happy to do it.
Yeah, please, yeah. And then we'll do questions on both.
And I think, you know, what we're seeing in Minnesota is a shift in our culture. Our commitment to early childhood education is not a flash in the pan, and it's not a guessing game. What we want to ensure is that we have the most prepared and the best educators in front of our youngest and most precious learners in those early childhood positions. The district adjacent to my own, I teach in Stillwater Public Schools, went through a challenge several years ago where their early childhood educators were shifted unexpectedly from one bargaining unit to another. This would ensure that we are committed to those who are serving our youngest learners and gives them the opportunity to demonstrate not just for a year or two their commitment to young learners, but for decades. And this is, as I've spoken about before previously in different settings, this is how we solve the teacher shortage.
Thank you so much. And so we'll move to questions from members about either of those sections at this time. We have Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. And I confess I did have a couple of folks find me in between committee meetings to kind of get me a little bit more spun up on this provision in particular. My question is, and I appreciate the fact that there's an exemption or an attempt to grandfather in some folks who maybe have been teaching for quite some time. I think that's a wise thing to do. But when this bill was being heard or as this language was being considered, was there any conversation or concern in regard to, you know, potentially creating another requirement or potential barrier for somebody to have to achieve this licensure requirement when they otherwise wouldn't have to currently, and the potential for that to shrink or, you know, diminish our pool of folks to be working with our kids on a daily basis?
Representative Hill, thoughts on that?
As far as an additional requirement, over time, perhaps it could be viewed that way. But, Senator, I appreciate the question, and forgive me, Chair Pinto, I'm a little out of practice here.
Yeah, I know, no problem.
But, you know, for me, this demonstrates the cultural shift that we're moving through here in Minnesota. Early childhood education is not crowd control. And, you know, the effort and the skill that our early childhood educators bring to bear is important. And so we want to make sure that we have the most equipped and the most talented folks that are standing in front of that room. And so as far as an additional barrier, we worked hard with the stakeholders to ensure that we had that legacy language in place. But I think that this commitment to our youngest learners is worthwhile. And I think it's important. And I think it's a worthy pursuit.
Senator Duckworth?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it, and I appreciate what was just shared. I think it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we want great people in the classroom. You know, we've talked a lot about, over the last couple of years in particular, the teacher shortage we're experiencing and the trouble that we're having getting more teachers and more folks into that profession. I know there are parts of the education bill focused on trying to help us with that. So that's where the question's coming from. I have mm-hmm. no doubt that we're trying to put great people in the classroom. I just want to make sure that we're not going to limit the number of great people we have to choose from in the future. So thank you for what was shared and for answering the question.
Thank you, Senator. Other questions? Chair Kunesh, please.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Could you just maybe speak, do you know about some of those that are already in this position, specifically like the ECSE folks? Are they in favor of this, or how are they stand on this issue?
Representative Hill.
Yes, the conversations I've had, I've not come across anyone that's in opposition to it. I'm certainly available and open if there are folks that have a perspective of that nature, but no, to this point, this allows for them to identify as a part of a bargaining unit, to have that standing in their communities that they deserve and that they've earned, and to move forward. And I just feel great about where we landed, that folks who have demonstrated over a long period of time that they're in this and they're committed to it can remain in those roles, and that as we look ahead, we make that investment to ensure that everybody has that background in childhood brain development and the pedagogy skills and tools that they need to make this a long-term commitment.
Thank you. Madam Chair?
No, nope, I'm good. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else from any other members? So, no, I think we are in good shape. Representative Hill, thank you so much for your work on both these sections and on the proposal and for the work in bringing folks together to advance it. Thank you. Good stuff.
Thank you, Chair Pinto.
Thank you. So, members, I think at this point we're going to move to Section 3 of our agenda, which is to sort of see what we can adopt at this time for a prospective conference committee report. Again, the plan is not to finalize such a report right now, but to make it as far as we can and then sort of have as few as possible items left open. There'll be a few. And in particular, I don't know that we'll necessarily make it to the spreadsheet, but at least going through the bill. So I'm looking at the – and I'll just see if there are any questions anybody has about that process so far. Not seeing anything. So looking at the bill comparison summary document, and I'm going to just sort of launch into this, I guess, that the first three sections are the same. And I had an opportunity to chat a bit with Chair Kunesh previously. And so I guess I would entertain a motion at this time to adopt sections 1, 2, and 3. They're the same in both bills, and so we'll go off the House bill since it's the one that was coming into conference, as well as Senate bills coming from the other pieces. And so entertain a motion from the chair if she's willing to adopt sections 1, 2, and 3 from House File 2292 for adoption for the conference committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move to adopt House Sections 1, 2, and 3 onto House File 2292, Conference Committee Report.
Okay. Is there any discussion to that motion? Not seeing any. So all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That motion passes. Then moving to section and the ones where there aren't comparable in each body, we'll move one by one. So section 4, I would invite a motion if the chair is willing to adopt section 4 from House File 2292. That's the one. That's one of the ones that we just discussed with Representative Hill's bill. Madam Chair, do you want to make that motion now? Would you rather not?
What yep, I'll go ahead. I again move to adopt the Senate section 4 onto House File 2292 Conference Committee Report. Is that correct?
I think you mean House Section 4, Madam
Excuse
Chair.
Me. House Section 4. Yep.
Okay. And so any discussion regarding that motion? Representative Daniels.
I would object to that section since it's not in the Senate language and not want to adopt that.
Okay. Do not want to adopt that. Okay. Any further discussion regarding the motion at all? Okay. So all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No. Please?
No? Okay. I believe the motion passes, and so Section 4 is adopted. Is there – okay, Section – so moving on.
Chair Pinto?
Yes.
President, do we need another senator to have that pass?
That is an excellent point, Representative Daniels. We probably do need to have have three of us around. So we're going to be meeting again. So in fact, that motion does not pass. So thank you. That motion fails because we don't. And in fact, that would actually indicate that our first motion also failed, even though we all agreed on it because we have to have a majority in the Senate, majority in the House. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Duckworth, we have the two of the three, and Senator Duckworth did approve that. So my apologies. Okay. So the first motion passed. The second motion did not. And so we will await further. So are there pieces then, let's see, that we can have some – we can be confident we have some agreement on. Since we are – and I don't know if you know if Okay. So then let's jump to – I'm inclined to jump to Section 7, Chair Kunesh, in that case. Actually, is that – I'm sorry, Section – actually, no, Section – Section 6, I think, because that's one there is. I'm thinking it makes sense to go to Section 6. And I'll invite members to look at Section 6, which is page. One moment. Anybody else is able to? Okay, page R5. Which is the same between the two bodies, except that there's an effective date in the House section that's not in the Senate section. And Ms. Mock, I might call on you that line 6.32, the effective date in the House version, does that have any practical effect as compared to not having the effective date in the Senate version? Can you just tell me about that?
Mr. Chair, no, it does not.
Okay, no difference. Madam Chair, I don't know if you feel ready to make a motion to adopt the Senate section with regard to that Section 6.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I will move to adopt Senate Section 6 onto House File 2292 Conference Committee Report.
Okay, so we'll need to have, we need to make sure that we've got sufficient support for that. So do we have discussion that that there's support for that motion to pass, to adopt the Senate's version of the ECFE support staff provision?
I beg your pardon. Mr. Chair, it is actually Senate Section 3. Okay. Not Senate Section 6.
Okay.
Believe so me. I move to adopt Senate Section 3 onto House File 2292 Conference Committee Report.
And just to make sure the motion is very clear, we're talking about, I'm looking at the bill comparison summary. It's Article 10, Section 3 from unengrossed House File 2497. Am I saying that right, staff? I can see. Okay. Ms. Mock?
The first unofficial engrossment of House File 2497.
Okay, which is listed on the Senate side of our bill comparison summary. Do we have any questions regarding the motion, first of all? Let's make sure that we're clear on that. Not seeing any. And then I would invite members to make comments as to whether they would support this motion or not. Oh, Representative Daniels, please.
Yeah, I'd object to motion.
Okay.
I'm not in favor of hiring more FTEs for MDE.
Okay.
Just...
Got it.
Necessary.
Okay, fair enough. Other comments? We would need to have unanimity on the Senate side. So, at the moment, so. Any comments? We'll just go.
So, Mr. Chair, I will withdraw the motion and revisit it.
That sounds good. Okay. Well, let's see here. Whether there's other pieces. Well, I'm not sure if there's another motion you wish to make, Chair Kunesh, possibly regarding Section 8, or perhaps another member wishes to make a motion regarding Section 8 of the House bill regarding the kindergarten entry assessment.
Mr. Chair, I'm already feeling the pressure over here.
Yeah, it's that time of year, Senator Duckworth. But no problem. Okay. Well, since we are short a member of, there's only six of us. I think we will adjourn very shortly. I will simply ask if there are any questions that anybody has regarding either process or regarding any of the provisions that we've either heard about today or otherwise. As long as we're together, looking to see if there are any. I'll give Daniels a second. Representative Daniels, you got a question, sir?
Just because of the light session tomorrow and possibly not being here Friday for session, any expectations when we'll meet again?
Senator Kunesh has the gavel tomorrow if she wishes to call a meeting, and otherwise the House would have the gavel on Friday. I would anticipate there being a meeting of the committee on Friday, assuming that there's not one tomorrow. We really want to keep things moving here. But Senator Kunesh, I don't know if you have a comment regarding expectations around tomorrow or otherwise.
And thank you for that question. We are looking at the calendar for tomorrow, and we will let you all know just as soon as possible.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Duckworth.
Just for the interest of maybe making some additional progress, I mean, there are other provisions in here that are the same. I'm more than happy to vote for if you want to continue some of this work.
Funny. I was looking for them actually, and was not quite positive. There's a couple minor differences, I guess. Senator Duckworth, can you give an indication of what you have in mind? I guess there's a couple with minor differences. So
yeah, I was looking at some from the earlier page as well, but
I'd be very, very happy to make progress if we can.
Thank you. Section 13 for House Section 13, for example.
That would be great. Yeah. In fact, Senator Duckworth, if you would like to make that motion, I would be delighted to. And I guess maybe just actually what we can do is if we can have either House Research or Senate Counsel just describe to us the difference between the House and Senate versions. I suspect Senator Duckworth and others would appreciate that. Might ask, well, since I'm the one in the chair, I'll impose on the House. Ms. Mock, if you could just tell us about the difference between the House and Senate versions of House Section 13.
Mr. Chair and members, the House version just adds some additional language to make it clear that when the parent of the student is electing in a non-resident district, that they can do it in the same manner as a parent electing in a resident district.
Okay. And my understanding that was some technical assistance. I think it was actually House staff that said that will make absolutely certain that if a non-resident parent is trying to enroll their kid in the district, that the district would have to treat that non-resident parent the same way they'd treat a resident parent. I see you nodding. Okay. Yeah. Certainly would invite a motion to adopt, to do whatever it may be that the House version then would, again, provide some clarity for those parents. Senator Duckworth, are you?
Mr. Chair, I respectfully would defer to the two chairs as to which of those two versions they would maybe prefer to see.
I think Chair Kunesh.
And we are on 13, correct?
Correct.
Yep. I think we were going to adopt the House language.
Okay. Senator Duckworth, does that seem acceptable to you?
It sure does, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, I will still impose on my chair to make the motion, if she's willing, to the adoption of House Section 13 from the House bill for adoption.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt House Section 13 onto House File 2292 Conference Committee Report.
Excellent. And then any further discussion regarding that motion? Not hearing any. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Well, that's good. All right. Got another section down. And are there any others that folks see that we can,
Mr. Chair,
knock out? Yes, Senator Duckworth.
Maybe House Section 7 is maybe worth discussing as well.
Yeah. Please. So Section 7, and I'll note, because I had spoken with staff earlier, and staff can confirm this, that this section came from the Department of Education in both bodies, but then the department had some additional technical assistance that's reflected in the House version and just didn't make it into the Senate, but otherwise it's coming right from the administration. It's line 8.29 on the side-by-side, page R7. So I don't know if folks would have questions about that difference at all regarding Section 7. So, and then otherwise, I think Chair Kunesh and I, when we spoke earlier, were inclined to go with the later TA from the Department of Education, and so therefore that would be the House version of Section 7. Chair Kunesh, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so are there, Senator Duckworth, any, would you be supportive of moving forward on that Section 7 in the House version?
I certainly would, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So then, Chair Kunesh, I guess I'd invite a motion from you to adopt House Section 7 for the Conference Committee Report.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt Section 7 of the House, I move to adopt House Section 7 onto the House File 2292 Conference Committee Report.
Okay. Any discussion or questions regarding that motion? And hearing none, all in favor of adoption of the motion, adoption of Section 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so we got five sections down. I'm not sure if anybody can identify. 16. Well, then 16 is being suggested as a possibility. I would suspect that would be supported by members. But we'll pause, give folks a chance to take a look at that. That's a House-only section that provides that if an appropriation or transfer in the article is enacted more than once during the session, then the appropriation or transfer must take effect only once. Would think probably all be okay with that, but Senator Duckworth, any objection to proceeding on that section 16?
Mr. Chair, is there someone maybe that could just give me an example of what a transfer of that might be, just so that I can have some additional context?
Yeah, good. Yeah, if I don't know if Ms. Mock, you have any sense. I'm trying to remember exactly where that came from, too. Or Ms. Beckel. Yeah, Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. I believe this language has been put in place over the years, but we solidified it sort of back in fiscal year 2020 with the pandemic, and just lots of appropriations were passing in a variety of different bills. Just wanted to make sure that there weren't any duplications. But sometimes there were bills that members wanted passed individually just to highlight them. And so those bills would be passed separately, but then they would also be part of an omnibus. Okay. So just to ensure that they wouldn't be duplicated, this language was put in as comfort language. To give an example of a transfer, that could be something as simple as, like, if there was something for curriculum to the Office of Higher Education, it could be this appropriation. This is appropriated to
I think I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, correct me if I'm wrong. So let's say we have the same appropriation in two different bills in the same session. Both bills pass to appropriate the same funding. Well, you only get it once. You don't get to have it twice. That's what this is saying.
That's what this
got it.
Yeah. And actually, I think in this case, right, we've got on the Senate side language came from the education bill. So we hope that we don't screw it up, but it's possible we appropriate something here, but then accidentally something also on the education side. So, So it actually particularly applies here. So, Senator Duckworth.
Makes sense to me, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Chair Kunesh, you want to move adoption of Section 16 from the House bill in that case?
I will. I move to adopt House Section 16 onto House File 2292 Conference Committee Report.
Okay. Any discussion to that or any questions? Not seeing any. So all in favor of adoption of Section 16 to the Conference Committee Report. This is from the House bill. Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that's six sections, and we are just about at our 12:30 time, so that was good. Thank you, members, for working through that, and thank you for the catch earlier. My apologies for that. I think I had not quite realized that we lost one of our senators, which is a challenge. So we are going to – so we'll see what happens potentially tomorrow for the Senate calling a meeting. We'll look to Chair Kunesh for that, and then otherwise expect to be meeting on Friday. We'll get information to you just as quick as we can. Anything else you want to say at this point, Chair Kunesh?
No, thank you for a good discussion.
Thank you all so much for an action-packed hour, and have a great afternoon. Thank you. With that, this conference committee meeting is adjourned.